This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 27th of September, 2021. And we have the results of the German election rolling in. We'll get to that shortly, also because there's very little immediate market effect. But just to round off how we closed last week on a fairly positive note, and we're up further in the futures overnight, despite maybe a mixed session, I guess, at best in China, where there's been a lot of focus, of course, on the Evergrande story and some ongoing concerning headlines about their energy pinch. I saw a headline this morning. I have no idea to what degree this is going to affect these large companies, but that even one Apple supplier, an iPhone assembler, apparently experiencing some risk of energy reduction or electricity reduction, and similar for Tesla. But in any case, a bright start to the week, at least in terms of U.S. futures. You can see on slide two, we've sort of risen above that 61.8% retracement level. That was sort of one of the last retracement hopes for those trying to maintain a bearish position. And then you have the 21-day moving average coming in around the current level. So I have a hard time. We're going to just erase all of this sell-off in one straight immediate rush higher, but it's been quite an amazing comeback here. What's your take on this market here, Peter? There's a lot on the plate this week. I'm surprised that there's not a little bit more caution in this market.
Yeah, we have an unfolding energy crisis. We have still have this situation in China. We have bottlenecks around the world. I mean, taking all these things together, it is quite surprising how forceful a rebound we are witnessing. But we have to respect the of course the direction of markets. And right now it's just pointing higher. So we're grinding higher with this rally, approaching 1 year with less than a 5% drawdown for the MSCI World. And it's also worth noting, I mean, if you look at slide two, our different theme baskets. So the theme baskets that are higher for this month is related to travel, logistics, semiconductors, and then the monopolies in the mega caps basket. And to me, it just flashes that investors like to invest in these gridlocks or these bottleneck areas of the economy where there is a lot of pricing power at the moment. And if we look at what happened last Friday, we had the news from China that is just announcing this and all-out banning of all crypto-related activities. We're talking about direct crypto-related, stable coins, everything. It's the biggest attack on crypto in China's history, and we can only speculate why it's happening. But obviously it's very energy intensive. China before have said that they don't think it's providing much positive value to society given how much electricity it's using. There could be other things as well, but nevertheless, watch this space, because I don't think we have seen the final outcome of this. Exactly. Thanks, John. But I want to stay with the situation in China. Things have stabilized. You can see here on slide three, the Hang Seng is trying to muster some positive energy. We are slightly higher than Friday's close in today's session. So that's a positive. Volatility indices are not going higher. So it seems like the market is calming down a little bit despite Evergrande's situation. It's still dynamic. It is stabilizing, but there are also talks, and there is in a Bloomberg article that they have now missed payments worth of $6 billion on a lot of their wealth products. So it's spreading. A lot of people is getting frustrated in China. Yes.
And there's also a talk of a political message to divert some of the funds to make sure that projects are completed rather than to creditors, which is an interesting signal in terms of the market value of some of these instruments,
which would fit with the common prosperity and the focus on on the social dynamics more than just appeasing bondholders, etc. And I think there was an interesting comment from the Singaporean bank, or it's a very large financial institution, DBS. The CEO was out in an interview this morning saying that based on his knowledge and the talks that he had had with major banks around Asia, there is very little systemic risk. There's very little exposure among other Asian banks. So I think we can. It seems like there's a lot of indication, at least, that Evergrande is a situation for China and not so much the rest of Asia.
All right. Now, really, one of the key things on our plate, and it's really the screws are tightening further. We've talked a lot about natural gas. Those prices are rising again, but we have crude oil. Ola, you're down the line. We have crude oil making new highs here. Where's the ceiling for this? What's the latest news behind what's pressuring prices higher? in this very important space as well. I mean, the world runs on fossil fuel still.
Well, it does indeed, John, and for the foreseeable future, it will continue to, especially if the wind doesn't blow as it hasn't been for the past few months in Europe. It is a combination. You're right. We're breaking higher this morning in Brent. We've seen that we've taken out the recent highs. And looking at the slide six here, I just put in the very long downtrend we had since the peak back in 2008. We're trading above that now. And that, from a technical perspective, say, well, then the next focus is 87 or just below, which was the highs from 2018. Several things. Obviously, we got the demand recovering as more and more people get vaccinated. We had the supply disruption in the US last month, which took barrels out of the market. And now we have the energy crunch with gas prices just continue to remain very elevated. We are trading up again in Europe this morning, both in power and on gas prices. And you can see on the slide as well how these prices, what they're trading in dollar terms relatively to US gas. And this is basically driving an increased focus on substitution. So if gas becomes too rich, you turn to fuel products to run your generators. So that's diesel and other forms of products derived from crude oil refining. And that basically adding an additional dimension to demand for crude oil as we head into the Northern Hemisphere winter. Goldman Sachs was out in the report. They have notoriously been one of the most bullish out there. And so far, they most certainly have been right. They have, over the weekend, upgraded their end-of-year call from 80 to $90, just citing all this increased tightness that come in now through the gas prices. So so I think I'll actually just take that as a cue lead into the gold slide, because I think gold is also holding its own this morning, trading a little bit higher, and it's really not support from yields and dollar that's doing it. Real yields are at the highest levels we've seen in a few months here. At minus 89 basis points, the dollar is still pretty close to a breakout to the upside. So I think it is a renewed focus on reflation and the energy input it will have on inflation around the world over the coming months. So that added that with the uncertainty that it would bring in terms of economic growth, I think that's the reason why we're seeing a small bounce in the metals. And looking at how speculators have been behaving, they are completely unprepared for any bounce in this market right now. The silver long was slashed to zero last week, down 94% on the week, and the gold long is at I think the lowest in a few months here. So, but you can see on the insert down slide 8, it's well below recent peaks. So the market is not prepared for a bounce. Obviously, the technical outlook right now, it doesn't give us any comfort, but it looks like the fundamentals are starting to play its part, potentially adding some inflationary support back into gold.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see a change of tack there from gold. If we do see yields bursting higher and those real yields coming up, if gold is able to remain firm in such a backdrop, I think it would be an interesting signal, like you say, maybe handing over a bit to actual inflation outcomes rather than this obsessive focus on real rates, et cetera, and the dollar. That'd be very interesting in development. And then you have on the next slide, on slide 9, you have the general positioning. Kind of interesting here to see that as we're getting to these record highs in this the so-called BCOM, which is the Bloomberg Commodity Spot Index, the participation is a bit down, or well down really, from the peak levels towards the beginning of this year.
It is indeed, and last week it dropped even further, and I think last week was probably potentially a bit of an outlier, because the market is, well, let's see, but the market was obviously worried about the developments in China, the Evergrande story, and the impact on the Chinese demand for some of these key commodities. But even the energy sector, where we saw has seen strength recently, there was also a setback. So positions are cut to the lowest in 13 months, as you say, with the commodity indices at a 10-year high. And just remember the BCOM, as we use here, the orange line, doesn't even including power, gas, and coal prices. So so commodity, the pressure from commodity prices is even higher than what these prices are reflecting. So what can we derive from this? Well, clearly, again, just like in the precious metal market, and a speculative market or a hedge fund driven market, which is not prepared for any further. Well, they have an elevated position, but it's well down on recent peaks. So it could add another dimension in terms of fresh buying if we see these continued breakouts.
All right. And then talking about where we are with commodities, and especially with these energy input prices, I've sort of scratching my head a little bit at wondering this morning, at what point will this rising commodity prices, or at least rising energy prices, affect risk appetite? I think you've delved a little bit into that with your slide here on slide 7, Peter. What are you trying to show us here?
Yeah, it's actually a little bit of going along the conversation we had this morning that markets and the economies and societies are complex systems. And one thing is narratives, what we think is the relationship, and another thing is what data actually shows us. And on slide 7, I've put in on the x-axis, it's the BCOM spot, and then on the y-axis, I've actually lagged it because there was no relationship. So this is actually 12 months lag. So what is a change in the in this commodity index relationship to where equities, what equity does, return-wise 12 months ahead? But even if I did, coincidence, so the same month or the month after, there, it's just basically like what you're seeing here. So it's there is no firm relationship. You could argue, as Ole said, that the BCOM is not including electricity prices. I would maybe say that maybe this relationship between those two things are just noise, as we can see here. But the true relationship is, to what extent does the BCOM feeds into inflation indices and month on month gains on inflation? Because we know, I've done a pretty big study on inflation versus equity returns, and we know that when we get to elevated inflation rates above 3.5% and 4% and beyond, it severely impacts the equity return. So maybe that's the underlying mechanism. So instead of focusing so much on the commodities, whether they're high, blah, blah, we need to monitor the inflation situation. And I still think that this energy shock, when I talk to journalists, I am 5 times more worried about the unfolding energy shock than the current Evergrande situation in China, because I think the energy shock, it has so many dynamics and implications and for everything. And then also, back in the 70s energy crisis, aluminium prices were quadrupling in almost only a year. So and that's used for cars, yeah, and airplanes and cans and what have you, kitchen appliances. So that's really something that could cause ripple effects.
Also, to play a little bit the devil's advocate and to underline your last point there, it's very different if crude oil has sort of collapsed because of some recession or COVID or whatever to, let's call it $25-$30 a barrel, then it doubles back to 60. That's 100% change, but it's back to a normal price. Yeah. Whereas if crude oil was to go from, let's say, goes up to $100 and then it doubles again,
yeah,
a la the moves actually, which were even greater back in the 70s, a totally different ball game. And yes, like you say, all those knock-on effects into all other inputs, because energy is an input into everything else. So yeah, very interesting regardless to see where we are with this unfolding situation. All right, let's rewind just a bit back to the key event this weekend. And I'm ashamed the listeners out there were not correcting me that I was kept saying that the election was today in Germany for some reason. And once I put that out there, I just kept saying it, even though it was, of course, Sunday. And anyway, we have had the election Sunday. It's not today. We have the results out this morning and late last night. So apologies for anybody that was listening to me on the timing. The outcome largely along the lines of expectations, with a bit of a tilt. The tilt was less than expected in favor of the center left and left parties. So you had the CDU-CSU with a historically bad result, but it was less bad than feared. Some of the polls showing they only had something around 20-21% support. That mean reverted a bit into the actual election results. So 24%, still an awful result for them, but better than expected. And then the SPD, approximately where they were expected. Greens slightly underperforming expectations, but still a huge growth in their result from the prior election. The FDP having a fairly consistent result. And then the AfD are disappointing a bit. And then the Linke way down the left. And in fact, if you look on slide 4, you see these results. And if the Linke does not get that 5%, that is the threshold at which you are allowed to have representation in the German Bundestag. And if they're below that 5%, they get 0 seats. So if you look at the party, the seats that will be apportioned based on these current results, and assuming the left gets in, you have the numbers for a stoplight coalition, as pointed out, or the so-called Jamaica coalition, which would be a replacing the Social Democrats with the CDU-CSU. That seems highly unlikely just from all the signaling going into this election result. Supposedly, the headlines tell us we should be waiting till maybe as late as Christmas or even into January before we see a coalition forming. Others suggest that there's you know, there sort of been pre-negotiations warming up all along, and the FDP is ready to take a bit more initiative this time around. The problem being it's slightly incoherent, some of their platform principles with their liberal-leaning supply-side reform tax cut principles relative to what the Green and the SPD wants to do, which is, you know, tactical tax hikes, higher minimum wage, huge investment in climate, et cetera. So very interesting to see how that shakes out. The immediate market result has been very limited because this is not the big slosh to one side that some thought might be a risk with a, for example, if the far left had gotten a better result and the SPD and Greens could have put together a coalition with them, that would have been the most extreme potential outcome on that direction. That's just not possible. So all in all, we need to watch how quickly this coalition forms in the platform it comes up with, assuming we do get this so-called stoplight coalition. And then the other thing really on the agenda for this week, besides the ongoing energy crunch, the focus on China, is the focus on U.S. yield. I don't have a yield chart here, but it's no secret, and we talked about it last week, that the 10-year really was lit on fire in yield terms, a big sell-off taking the 10-year above that key resistance level on yields. 1.4% is where it was trading recently, and arguably, you would need to see that momentum continuing before this becomes a big factor. So it's out there. The break has happened. Does it continue further and higher? I would say above 1.5%, it becomes an even bigger issue. It's already affecting the lowest yielding currencies and the most yield sensitive currencies like the Japanese yen. You can see the overview of FX on slide 5. Huge change in momentum in the yen over the last few trading sessions. Dollar yen breaking some trend support, trend resistance, arguably, or at least consolidation resistance. It's extremely compressed in range as well. So if we do get a yield breakout, I think the volatility could really expand here, as we've seen a very, very quiet Japanese yen. And the Japanese yen is a classic input and driver of volatility when it really starts to move. So curious about that. We also have a very heavy euro dollar after this election. If it's breaking below, you know, arguably, it's somewhat akin to this dollar yen chart, but flipped over. If it's breaking below that 116.64 range low, I think that suddenly we have euro dollar and dollar yen showing a bit more movement if there's a big yield story going on here. And then it only becomes dollar versus risk sentiment if we're seeing these higher yields impacting risk sentiment. I don't know what level that would happen. I would suspect certainly above the highs of the cycle in the 10-year at 1.75% that you would see that risk risk off feeding into global equities as well. But Peter, it looks like you don't even have an earnings slide this week for this week because the earnings season is so quiet right here.
There are a few earnings releases, but they are without any importance for market direction or sentiment. So we're basically just warming up for the US earnings season to start within the next couple of weeks. And it's going to be very, very interesting. And I think the overall theme of commodity inflation and to what extent it is impacting, you know,
especially guidance, I guess.
Would be guidance. Yeah. It's the guidance on the profit margins. We have seen some color from Nike, FedEx and others that the margin pressure is sort of beginning to bite at large corporations. So I think that would be the key theme.
All right. There's so much on the calendar this week, macro wise. Have a look at slide 10. I don't want to mention everything. Obviously, with the Fed, with the FOMC meeting out of the way last week, we have sort of Fed speakers unleashed. They can run around and chat up their different positions. So they're all over the place this week. I would draw your eye to Thursday because that is the last day of the U.S. budget year, financial year. There is no stopgap measure in place to fund the U.S. government beyond Thursday. The U.S. Congress has done a miserable job preparing for this inevitable situation. And we don't really know where this goes, except that we always think it's simply going to happen, that they avoid, of course, a U.S. default. That is probably a very safe position. The question is how bad the brinksmanship gets and the very divided political environment sees them playing a game of chicken around this issue and using it as a negotiating tactic in terms of these different bills, et cetera, that need to be passed and not yet been passed by both houses, so are not yet law. And the first of those is the infrastructure bill that was passed by the Senate and was supposed to be voted on today by the House, but apparently, and I suspect because progressive Democrats are standing in the way because they want that bill linked with the big $3.5 trillion social and climate bill, they've been threatening to spike this bill if the other bill was not included. That vote has been delayed by House Speaker Pelosi until Thursday. Ironically, they're voting on something to be funded when they don't have the funds because of the debt ceiling situation to even pay for it. But whatever, it's a big mess, and we need to see how this shakes out. I suspect we could have one of the worst episodes of this government shutdown, et cetera, this year since the 2011 and 2013 episodes of similar episodes. So we need to stay tuned for that. It could become one of these exogenous factors for this market. And we also have some interesting inflation data up, the September flash Eurozone on Friday and the German one a day ahead of that, as well as the official August US PCE inflation, the one the Fed uses in its calculations. So a pretty busy calendar. I think there's plenty going on this week with energy, with China, with the US debt situation, and then these yields as well, having done a technical break last week. So stay in your seats. We'll see how it unfolds, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.